Accession number 31510, reel 7.
Which contains a colour. Tracer red, incendiary blue, armour piercing green, so are you. That was the rhyme. Purple is an ordinary ball cartridge, which, you know, just a bullet. Yeah. But I was surprised when I saw that photograph. People in Norway sent the photographs over. There's some team in Norway doing a video of the Trondheim raid. And, well, that's to do with that. Yeah.
What did you find morale was like among the British service personnel before the German advance across North Africa was...
Pretty good. Yeah, pretty good. No, when I say we were evacuated, it was a... We had to be evacuated because they couldn't... We couldn't allow the Germans to capture the ships or anything else, could we? So when we were told to pack up and go to so-and-so, we did. Yeah. Yeah. That was some... Oh, no, it was before Alamein. I get a bit mixed up sometimes. When I joined 826 Squadron, they had been up the desert. And they'd come back to Decatur. They were still doing trips up the desert because the Germans were closer, within range. But it was decided to give the pilots a rest. So we packed up and packed up all the wagons and we drove across the delta to Suez Canal, a place called Kantara, and there was a pontoon bridge across the Suez Canal, and we crossed over the bridge. There was no town or anything like that there, and we crossed the Sinai Desert to, I know we went through Beersheba, and we went past the old Crusader forts at Acre. I learned all that at school, you know. Yeah, I was interested in that. Yes. Going across the Sinai Desert, we had a sandstorm. First sandstorm I'd been in, proper sandstorm. As we drove along, we could see the sand trickling across the road for some reason or other, and looking that way, we were going north. Looking that way, it looked like a yellow cloud in the distance.
Coming from the east.
And it got closer. Yes, that's right. And it got closer and closer and closer, and we could see that it was a sandstorm then. So we stopped the lorries and got our gas capes, put them over our heads, and we had some gas goggles, supposed to use in mustard gas attack, you know. Put those on, stood in the lee of the lorry, and you never know anything like it. Oh, dear. I could describe it, but you'd never understand what it was like. It was just as though someone had a sandblaster. It was so hard it hurt the skin. Terrible. You couldn't breathe. You opened your mouth, it was full of sand. Your nose was blocked up, eyes blocked up, ears bunged up. Couldn't breathe. Terrible job. Yeah. Oh dear. I remember it being described when I was at school, sandstorms, but I didn't realise it was like that. Cool, it was. And if you touch something, you got an electric shock. Static electricity. generated by the wind and the sand. Yeah, if you touch your mate, you've got a shock. Quite a click. Yeah. Yes. And after the sandstorm, of course, everything was covered with sand. We unblocked our noses and cleaned out our ears and got going again, and it rained. It rained, and the yellow sand was turned into yellowish mud all in the lorries, and oh, it was a pickle. Yeah. We slept by the side of the road with a rifle strapped to us because of, we thought, thieves, and there were thieves about. Yeah, we came to a Bedouin camp near the Palestine border. And they were warned to keep away from us. But somebody, what did I do? I think I swapped with one of them. I swapped some tin cans for a knife. It was a long bladed thin knife, like a paper knife, and it had a bone handle. Now, he reckoned it was a human bone, but I don't know. Anyway, I swapped it. And later on, when I went up the desert, there was a soldier. And he saw this knife. It was where we'd stopped for a brew up, you know, we saw a soldier. And I said I'd got it from an Arab up in Palestine. I said, I think it's a human bone on the end. Oh, he said, I'll swap you, he said. I've got an Arab knife as well. So anyway, let's take this off.
And you gave me this knife. Which is also an Arab knife. Handmade. Even that's handmade. Yeah. Arab knife.
Painted it with a golden colour and put on his belt. Yeah. Yes. How far did we get? Forget now.
You've just been swapping the knife. You just swapped the knife.
Oh yes, that's right. Yeah. Well, we got to Palestine, past Acre. We turned inland from Acre. It was way up past Haifa. And we came to a flat. It looked like mud, dried mud, but it was a flat area, and next to it was a steep hill with an Arab village up on top. Prickly pears growing up round the sides, and that's a nuisance, prickly pears. On the way into Palestine, we stopped by the side of the road and some prickly pears. So we thought we'd, like the cactus, you break off the top, and all the things are in your fingers already. See? And how do you get it open to eat what's inside? Oh dear. People got these very, very fine hair thorns in their lips, in their tongues, in their fingers. And there's some Arab children there. There's a photograph somewhere. Not in that one. Yes. Took a photograph of it. And these Arab children showed us how to do it. So you knock the prickly thing off onto the ground, you see, and you hold it with your foot, and you cut one end off, You cut the other end off, and then you can hold it like that, can't you? And you cut them, use a knife, cut it that way, and then you can peel it around, can't you? You don't get the things in your fingers at all. Simple, really. Yeah. Oh, yeah. So easy. If only we'd known. Yeah, anyway, we reached this place. And, of course, there was nothing to do. There was no flying. So I said to the chap in charge of transport, another airman, I said, I'm going up to that village. I said, I'm not going to wait here and do nothing. I'm going up to the village, see if I can get some horses. It was like cowboy country, rocky and like, you know, like cowboy films. So I said, I'm going to try to get some horses. So he said, all right, I'll go with you. So we walked up through these prickly pears, up the steep slope to this village up on top. And I asked the first man I saw, didn't see any women, really. No, I asked the first man who was the boss. See? So he understood a bit of English, and he showed me where to go. And we saw a chap. He was older than us. He might have been about 30. We were early 20s, look. And he was supposed to be the head man of the village. So I said, we'd like to hire some horses, please. He said, no, not hire. He said, I'll take you, he said. Which was very good of him, wasn't it? So, all right, they produced the horses and we mounted up. And he took us out for a ride all the way around the rocks and everything else, you know. Very nice. So we thanked him afterwards and said, could we come again? Oh, yes. So we went again. And he used to take us around all over the place. And the Arab horse, those horses, it didn't have a bit and that kind of thing. Just had a rope round the nose. And the rope came up port side, and if you wanted the horse to go that way, you held the rope over his neck, see, and if you wanted to go that way, you pulled the rope out sideways, and that's all there was to it. And they were marvellous horsemen, you know. I could ride, but not like them, no. And they'd ride through a ravine, a narrow gully, and want to turn the horse round, and of course the horse couldn't turn round. They made the horse stand up on its hind legs and turn round. Marvellous to watch. I couldn't do it, of course. But I used to ride round the field where the aircraft were. Yeah, used to go half a leather round there. Flat out. Yeah. And sometimes the horse wouldn't stop sometimes, and they'd run through where the tents were, you know, and their legs would catch the tent ropes and knock the tent down. So the CO asked me to keep the horses out of the tented area, which I did. So that's what we used to do. And I had a message one day, written message. I still got it in one of the books. Dear friend of the RAF, I'm being married on such and such a day. I would be glad if you would be my guest at my wedding. So please let me know how many will come, and I'll send horses to pick you up. So I sent a message back. I asked some of the officers, some of the pilots, if they'd like to go. Yes, some of them would. So I sent the message back, say how many were coming. And the horses arrived. And up we went up the hill. And there was the chief man sitting on a large chair in an open space. No women. All the Arab men were there what do you call them? I don't know. Grommet on top, you know? Yeah. And all around his chair were cigarettes. Just lit and thrown away. It's rude to refuse a present. So if you offer him a cigarette and he's smoking one, he takes it out, throws it away, and smokes yours. So they were cigarettes around his chair. Anyway, that was all right. We offered the cigarettes and talked to him, and an old man came out and squatted on the ground, and he had a whistle pipe, about that long, I suppose, and he played a whistly tune. And all the men got up, joined arms, and we joined up with them. And I don't know what they were shouting. Some Arabic thing, we shouted as well. And they were all stamping their feet, and we did the same, and we went forward and backward and sideways, and the dust rose up, you know. And it was good fun. And then when the dancing was over, we had to go into a house. Was a very large room in there, and we took our shoes off, boots, and we sat around the wall of this large room, and over in the corner was an old Arab with charcoal fire and a coffee pot of one of these tall brass things. He was making coffee. And he made the coffee, and the cups were, well, like egg cups. No bigger than egg cups. And he put the coffee in, and the chap came round with a tray. And we took this coffee, and it was thick. And we sipped it, it was hot. Sipped it, and it was sweet. It was beautiful. No milk in it, just black. It was beautiful. Beautiful coffee. So we had that, and the cup went away. Along came another one. Oh, this is lovely. Lovely it was. Yeah. Put that one back. Along came another one. This is nice. No, we haven't had much because they're only small cups. Tip it back. Well, it made your teeth curl out. It was terrible. Oh, it was horrible. Oh, dear. And you couldn't spit it out, could you? It would be rude. So it was a terrible taste. It dried your mouth up completely. So we said to one of the Arabs, "Why is it so bad, so nasty?" "It could clean your mouth. You're going to eat soon. You don't want any sweetness left in your mouth." So, fair enough. So we went through to another room, and there was a large white cloth on the ground with mats all around. There were several people already squatting on the mats, and they sat one side, we sat the other, and there were several things on the mat in the middle, and somebody brought in I don't know whether it was a full sheep or half a sheep, already cooked, and put in the middle of the table, but there were no knives and forks. And there was an Egyptian there. And I said to the Egyptian, "What do we do?" "Do as they do," he says. So they all put their hand out on the roast lamb and pulled it, you know, pulled a piece off. And we did the same. And there was the flat bread and that kind of thing. A lot of other things. It was quite nice, quite enjoyable. And after that, I said to her, "Where's the bride?" "Oh, they're having their celebration in another part of the village. Don't see the bride. But her father brings the bride to the bridegroom when the festivities are over." So we didn't see any women at all. No. So anyway, they were very kind. I give them that. They were very kind. Yeah. So that was our little do in Palestine. We went to Haifa. And I picked up some of the gun spares that I'd already sent to Haifa. They were in the dockyard. And, you know, I picked up some of those. And then I suppose Alamein was coming up. So the armourers and three or four others, I don't know whether they were fitters, I can't remember now, fitters or riggers, Bombay landed on our strip, and we got aboard the Bristol Bombay and flew back to Dekela. And that was an amazing trip. I'd never realised it before. But if you fly over the Nile Delta, you can see it. The sand and the green. It's just as though somebody drew a line there. Green that side, sand this side. It's a wonderful sight. I never realised. I thought it would be a gradual change, you know, from sand to vegetation. But no. No. So that was that. We landed at Dekela and got the aircraft ready when they arrived. Yeah. And that was the beginning of Alamein.
Were you able to get much information about what was happening elsewhere in the war?
No. No, we used to hear the radio, but we didn't really take much notice of it. Of course, we were a bit pleased when the Americans decided to come in, 1941, at the end of 1941. Yeah. Yes, that was a pleasant bit of news. We saw it about time too, you know. Yeah. No, it was, that was good news. But there were other Australians there, you see. Indian troops, New Zealanders. There were some Poles up the desert, Popsie's Private Army, they called themselves, didn't they? But I never saw any of those. I saw Polish soldiers on the troop ship coming home. And that's a different story. Yeah. Yeah. When it was time to come home, 1943, we were taken down to Suez. And out in the bay was a great big liner which looked like the Queen Mary, but it wasn't. It was called the Ile-de-France, a French liner, three funnels, like the Queen Mary. Great big liner. So, we went aboard that to come home. And there was no escort. She relied on her own speed to, you know, out with the submarines. And we had to call it, we called it Durban on the way home. And it was one of my jobs. I didn't do gun job in there. They had an Oerlikon on board, a 20mm Oerlikon, and they had their own gun crew for that. One of my jobs was to go down to see that the marine sentries were on duty at the watertight doors down below. And I used to have to go through the Polish mess deck for that. I don't think I ought to tell you. No. But I saw many of them walking about with long cigarette holder. Yeah. Hair nets. Little frimsy knickers. I got out of there as quick as I could. Yeah, whether that was the usual thing for them, I don't know. But it was Polish people building this place next door. They seemed to be all right. No, I hurried through that mistake. Yeah. But that was a good trip home. Fast. Yes, it went right down past Tristan da Cunha on that trip. What a bleak place that looks. Yeah, called it Rio. Of course, couldn't go ashore. Wouldn't have to go ashore there. We went ashore in Durban, though. No, we wouldn't have to go ashore in Rio. And then we came home. Where did we come to? Greenock. On the Clyde. That's right. Yeah. One chap could see his house. But he had to come down to Leon Solent to be given leave to go back again. Oh dear. What a waste of time. Yeah. Yeah, we disembarked there and caught the train down to Leon Solent. And I had a lemon. And I went into the nappy at Leon Solent and I said, I've got a lemon. Oh, bring it in, please, because we'll raffle it. I hadn't had lemons for ages, look. No, I took it home. And I had a kit bag full of tins of fruit because we were told that the people here were starving, you see. We did get that bit of news, so I thought, well, if I can, on the ship you could buy as many tins as you like. So I bought all tins of all sorts of fruit and brought them home. Yeah, which they enjoyed, of course. Yes. But the desert was that was hard. Because of food, you see, food and water. Corned beef was the main diet, staple diet. And the Navy had ship's biscuits. Army biscuits were not quite as good. Ship's biscuits were all about that square, I suppose, and about that thick. Hard as anything. But they were sweeter. So corned beef and those, and a pint of water, just over perhaps. We had our own water bowser, but we still had to ration it. And, well, it was a very barren part of the country, you see. Up to Benghazi was all right. Benghazi wasn't bad. It was all in ruins, of course. And the airfield was covered with broken down aircraft and bomb holes and all kinds of things. When we got there, there was a chap playing a piano outside his tent. Been into Benghazi and picked up a piano. And in the army tents, they had wardrobes and chest of drawers and all kinds of things. Yeah. But further up, the desert. It was rough. It wasn't all sandy. It was when you got up into Tripolitania, it was rocky, stony, grey, stony desert. So any explosive carried the stones with it, you see. Yes. When we were about to leave Benghazi, there was a little terrier dog, and the road leading out of Benghazi, because there was only one road going up the desert in those days, and that wasn't wide enough for two lorries. You had to drive two wheels on the road and two wheels on the sand. There was a little dog running about, little rough-haired terrier. And he was going to get killed. So we were all lined up ready to move off. And we said, he's going to get killed, you know. All these army lorries are going by. So we called him. And he jumped up in the back of the lorry. Well, he didn't jump up. He came to the back of the lorry and he just helped up. So he came with us. And every time we stopped for a make tea or something like that, or toilet, because wherever you are, you've got to go, haven't you?